That is the sound you never want to hear. It is the sound of a warning siren going off at a nuclear power plant. When you hear that sound, it means you are in the nuclear hot seat. Welcome to Nuclear Hot Seat, the weekly podcast keeping you up to date on all things anti-nuclear. My name is Libby Halevi. I'm the producer and host of this podcast, and before we get started, I have a last-minute change in the interview today. I was planning to interview Kimberly Roberson, the author of Silence Deafening, Fukushima Fallout, A Mother's Response, a wonderful book on food safety in the wake of the Fukushima accident. However, as you can tell, Kim is a mother. She has a sick child, and that's where her priorities are this week, so we'll catch up with her in 2 weeks for that interview. But today, we're very pleased. I will be interviewing Donna Gilmore with some interesting news on San Onofre and the power grid, and an update on the California ballot initiative, and we'll hear from Ace Hoffman on exactly what's happening on those tests at San Onofre. For now, today is Tuesday, March 20th, 2012. It is 1 year and 9 days since the Fukushima tragedy began on March 11 of 2011, and here is the latest nuclear news. It seems like the pro-nuke forces all decided that they were going to hold off for 1 year after Fukushima, and once the anniversary passed, they're coming down fast and furious with as much pro-nuke stuff as they can. This story, which was picked up by Bloomberg and is now all over the internet, is that The Daily Show with Jon Stewart has gone nuclear. The Nuclear Energy Institute, representing companies including Entergy Corp and Southern Corp, will use the Emmy Award-winning Comedy Central show starting today, March 20th, for an advertising campaign showing the value of atomic power. The industry wants, quote, to reach some of the younger audience that are helping to shape policy, end quote. This according to Scott Peterson, the Washington-based industry group's senior vice president for communications, a.k.a. PR FLAC. Now, NIRS has put together a protest against this. This is our friends at the Nuclear Information and Resource Service. They have links so that you can email the show, and there's also a campaign on Facebook because there is a Daily Show Facebook page. Just be aware that NEI, the Nuclear Energy Institute, will be doubling its annual advertising spending during this campaign season, though the specific figures are not available. And the ads are going to appear not only on The Daily Show, but over the next 6 months in such outlets as The Washington Post, The Economist, Bloomberg Businessweek, and on NBC Nightly News with Brian Williams, the network's Meet the Press, Facebook, and National Public Radio. How they are doubling their advertising spending on National Public Radio, I don't know. We'll have to be aware of that one. Meanwhile, as of the 15th of March, again, just past the one-year anniversary, TEPCO, Tokyo Electric Power Company, has cut off all public reactor data reporting. With no prior announcement, TEPCO quietly shut down all the reports that they had been sending out of their monitoring. Now, since soon after the disaster, the company had been providing information about the reactor status and sensor data through a number of ongoing documents and data feeds. The information was available in both Japanese and English and had been provided since the first weeks of the disaster with data going all the way back to the accident. However, since March 15th, those documents no longer update. What have they got to hide? Good question. We really should be able to find out. Meanwhile, in Japan, some 1.5 tons of low-level radioactive water, I love the way they say low-level but never give us figures, low-level radioactive water leaked from a storage tank of a nuclear reactor in the process of decommissioning at Japan's atomic power company's plant in the village of Tokai. Investigations are underway to check if the water has flowed into the sea, the agency, that's the Nuclear Information Agency said. According to the announcement, water was used to decontaminate radiation protection suits and other items and was contaminated to an extent of 33 becquerels per gram. Now, note that becquerels are usually provided per kilogram or something larger, but 33 becquerels per gram, that means 33,000 becquerels per liter. And yet they're labeling that low-level radioactive material that was being decontaminated by this water. Again, there's no telling where that water is. It's either in the water table or back in the ocean. in Japan going on that there are soaring cesium levels in the Itate soil. This is found according to a survey. It's so radioactive it would have to be buried in ferrocarbon concrete partitions in order to render it safe. This according to the Environment Ministry in Japan. The soaring cesium reading of 154,000 becquerels per kilogram has been logged in the soil from the village of Itate, and this is in Fukushima Prefecture. This is the highest level yet that has been found. The reading came from soil taken from the banks of the Nido River in Itate, and this is above the level that requires incinerated ash to be buried in sites, again, in these ferroconcrete, I guess these are concrete cask partitions. The level that requires that is 100,000 becquerels, and here we've got 154, so it's half again too high. Inadequate testing, this is dealing with the crops in Fukushima, inadequate testing by the government of rice, milk, and fish from the region has prompted consumers to leave them on supermarket shelves and instead select produce from other regions or from overseas. In Japan, checks conducted nationwide so far are only 1% of what Belarus checked in the last year, a quarter of a century after the Chernobyl disaster. This according to a researcher at the Norinchukin Research Institute. Contaminated produce still found a way to market, even as government assured people that testing was adequate. Sample surveys last year failed to prevent contaminated tea leaves from Saitama Prefecture and beef and rice from Fukushima from being shipped to market. The tainted rice came after Fukushima Governor Sato said in October that grain from the prefecture was safe to eat, deepening consumer concerns. According to Hideshi Michino, a director at the Health Ministry's Food Safety Department, quote, to eliminate tainted items completely from the food supply, all products must be tested, which can't be done. So in other words, there's untested food, produce, meat, fish, etc., going to market in Japan. So the response, which is coming from one of the citizens of Tokyo, a senior, is to wage an individual effort to get elderly people to eat rice grown in Fukushima Prefecture to help local farmers struggling with rumors that their crops are radioactive, and to say nothing but truth that they're radioactive, and to make sure that the grain isn't consumed by more vulnerable younger generations. The elderly must eat Fukushima rice, Hino resident Hidekuzu Hirai, who's 68 years old, told the Japan Times on Monday. Compared with young people, the elderly are believed less prone to the harmful effects of radiation. He has been contracting to sell the rice, though not at profit, just to make it available. And about 700 kilograms has already been bought by an elder care facility in Tokyo, he said. We know from information that we've gotten from Dr. Helen Caldicott and others that the elderly are far more vulnerable to radiation than many other groups of people. It's the elderly, the very young, and fetuses, and those who are immune compromised are the most likely to be harmed by radiation. And here this man is telling the elderly to eat it, and there's a facility that's actually buying it to feed to the elderly in the facility. It's absolutely numbnuts. Finally, this regarding Japan, Arne Gunderson was over there, and he took some tests, and he found levels. Well, I spoke about this last week on Nuclear Hot Seat. But in an interview that he did with Steve West and Dan DeWaite on WKVT-AM, he said, quote, young girls and mothers will have a statistically dramatic increase in cancer, something to the tune of one out of every five young girls, that's 20%, in that kind of radiation field within 30 to 40 kilometers from Fukushima Daiichi will get cancer over their lifetime. Well, let's find out what's happening with our own nuclear power plants here in Southern California. I'm very pleased to be interviewing today, first, Donna Gilmore, who's with San Clemente Greens, SanOnofreSafety.org, and the California Ballot Initiative. She's a very busy woman. Donna, welcome back to Nuclear Hot Seat.
Thanks, Lizzie.
Well, you greeted me on the phone earlier today by saying, we don't need nuclear power plants for energy in California, and to which I can only say, well, yeah, but what's giving this statement more muscle today?
Well, we actually have reports. We have data. We have CPUC data showing that we have close to 150% excess power in California without either of the two nuclear plants, San Onofre or Diablo Canyon.
And would you please tell people, what does CPUC stand for?
Oh, I'm sorry, the California Public Utility Commission. They're the ones that are supposed to be looking out for the ratepayers in California and regulating the utility companies in California.
Okay, so if we've got excess power now, how long is there going to last? I mean, aren't we going to be facing some kind of problems when we start in peak energy during the summer?
No, this is the peak energy numbers. This is the CPUC requires a 15% surplus for peak, and this represents 150% above peak. And this goes through the year 2020. It's projected through the year 2020.
So, in other words, we've got another 8 years at least with 150% excess power here in California.
Right. And then San Onofre is in a little pocket area down here, and Edison, the plant owner, has been saying that we might have or we could have blackouts in the summer in our little area here. But the electricity grid operators' written reports say San Onofre could be down in peak summer months and there'll be no impact. So there's no basis for any of these PR reports coming out from Edison trying to scare people to say, oh, well, there could be rolling blackouts. Because we have written documentation that that's not true.
Now, is this written documentation from a new report that was just issued?
Well, it's in a report, the transmission plan, and it's not a new report, but it's a report that's over 500 pages long. I don't think they ever expected somebody to actually read this report. And Barbara George of Women's Energy Matters actually read through that report and found this information. So I've been working with her, and we've been studying it and trying to find other documentation to contradict it. We have written requests trying to get data that would contradict this report. There's been nothing. So this is the only thing in writing that we've found. If somebody else can find something else in writing, we'd love to see it.
Now, if people wanted to actually take a look at these reports or the information that's compiled, where might they find the information?
If you go to sanonofresafety.org, that's sanonofresafety.org, and you'll find links there to the actual report, and you can see the data for yourself.
Terrific. So basically we've got some muscle behind saying we really don't need the nuke plants here in Southern California or in Northern California either.
Yes, either place. Either place. We don't need these plants. Why are we putting up with this risk? It doesn't make any sense.
Well, at this point, you know, San Onofre has been, I believe, both reactors have been offline since late January. One was offline with the steam generators being examined, and the other one had, there was a leak through a pipe, so that one went down. So we've been without San Onofre's generators now for about a month and a half. Is that correct?
January 31st, Unit 3 went down. January 9th, Unit 2 went down.
Okay, so they've both been down. Well, we also have on the line Ace Hoffman. Ace, you there?
Yes, I am.
Wonderful. And could you fill us in? Ace is a longtime activist down in the Orange County, San Diego County area regarding San Onofre. Could you fill us in on what's going on at San Onofre, the kind of tests that are happening, and what is or is not showing up?
Well, they're having some pretty bad problems. As Donna mentioned, they had shut Unit 2 down, and discovered that the steam generator tubes, which are these very thin tubes inside of very thick walled containers called steam generators, huge, bigger than a tractor trailer truck. And the tubes inside had worn prematurely, and after just about 14 months of use in the reactor, they were showing two of them had 30% wear, and about 70 of them, I believe, had 20% wear or more. And about 800 of them, or 700, had 10% wear or more. So they had a problem with how much wear they have after so little time. And while they were trying to figure out what was going on with that, they had a steam tube rupture in Unit 3. That was on January 31st.
So they were already taking a look at these pipes in one generator when a pipe of that sort ruptured in the other one.
Yeah, well, actually, there's two generators per reactor. So in one set of generators, when one busted in the other set of generators in the other reactor.
So what are they doing now to determine whatever they have to determine about? I'm sure they're trying to figure out how to get them back online, but what are they finding about the tubes?
Well, it's very interesting. Things are getting worse and worse for them, and they thought about what to do, and they let the reactors cool, and they finally decided that there were 129 that they wanted to do extensive pressure testing with.
129 pipes.
Out of almost 10,000, actually out of almost 20,000, because there's two steam generators. So out of the 20,000, or assuming that they're only testing the ones in the one generator that busted, maybe out of 10,000. But call it what you will, they came to 129 that they wanted to test more extensively. Now, this is where it gets very interesting. In order to test them, they have to isolate them and increase their pressure to about three times the normal operating pressure of the reactor. Now remember, this is a pressurized water reactor, so the normal operating pressure is tremendous. It's 2,200 psi. Atmospheric pressure is about 15 psi. So they started to do this extensive testing on these 129 that they identified, and this is in the reactor that only had one that burst, not the one with 800 that were weakened. And they started having tube failures. They started the tests on the 14th of March, past week, and immediately the one that had already failed again during the testing or failed completely. I'm not sure how they would word it, but at any rate, it failed at a pretty low level, just a little above operating pressure. It was releasing half a gallon a minute. And then two others failed. And then the next day, four more failed, and they've only begun the testing of the 129. This is unprecedented in the industry. I mean, it's just ridiculous.
And now, is this because of design? Is it materials? Is it just it's such a bad idea that everything has corroded? I mean, do they? I'm not looking for anything to get them off, but is there any kind of explanation they could possibly use for this?
All of the above are possible explanations. If they have the chemicals improperly mixed, it's called a pressurized water reactor, but that water is a very deadly brew of radioactive chemicals and other all kinds of things. And some of the chemicals there may have caused accelerated wear. But most people don't seem to think that's the problem, because apparently San Onofre is really good at getting the chemicals right. Another possibility that's been mentioned, and that other people scoff at, is that it was damaged in shipping. Now, I think if it was dropped a little bit, it's possible nobody would have said anything. So that's a real possibility, in my opinion. Another possibility is that the water flow through the system is not the way they thought it would be when they designed it. These things are very, very complicated systems, and anything with water flowing at tremendous speed and pressure, let alone temperature, is difficult to calculate on computers and so on, when you go to actually use the things. So another possibility is it wasn't designed right. Another possibility is that it wasn't manufactured right, because the manufacturing of these pieces is very complicated. It's a very specific alloy with very carefully measured quantities of various things, you know, iron and chromium and whatever. And so if the alloy isn't mixed properly, if it isn't then heat treated properly and cooled and on and on and on. There's a lot of steps in it, and a lot of these steps are proprietary. So we don't even know what Mitsubishi Heavy Industries in Japan was doing to the reactor pressure vessels or steam generators, and we have no way of finding out. They're not going to tell us.
So basically we have two nuclear reactors that have steam generators that run. That's radioactive water that runs through them?
Through the inside of the tubes is the highly radioactive primary coolant, and on the outside of the tubes is the much less radioactive, and they'll always tell us it's not radioactive at all. But there's usually a little leaks in those steam generators. In fact, they're allowed up to, I think it's 75 gallons a day.
75 gallons a day are allowed to be radioactive or are allowed to leak?
You're allowed to leak 75 gallons a day from the primary coolant into the secondary coolant without having to shut down. When they had the steam rupture, they initially reported that they were losing 30 gallons a hour, I think it was, and then they decided it was over 85 gallons a day, and then they shut down, and then later they said it was only 85 gallons total or something like that. They said they had just, they basically implied that they didn't really have to shut down at all at the time. It was purely voluntary.
Oh, and of course, there's no harm in this at all. So let's cut to the chase on this. How can we, within our movement, use this information to leverage the powers that be to get these things taken offline permanently?
Well, I think one situation that we have here is the fact that it's unprecedented failures, and when they went to test them, well, to give you an example of how unprecedented this failure, these seven failures out of 129 is, they went back into Unit 2 and decided to pressure test some of the tubes in that unit. When I say some, I'm being exaggerating. They decided to pressure test one tube in Unit 2. So they're really afraid of doing a very extensive test. I mean, one would immediately think if they're going to have these kinds of problems in Unit 3, they're going to turn around and in Unit 2 test hundreds of tubes in each of the generators. But they only tested one. And I'm glad to report that it passed. That one tube did indeed pass the test.
One out of 10,000. Wow, what are the odds?
Out of 20,000.
That's right, because there are two reactors, so that's double the number.
40,000 altogether, yeah, almost. You know, 39,500 or something.
And just one last question, Ace. To what extent is this information actually getting out? I know Los Angeles hasn't been good about covering it, but down in the Orange County and San Diego County area, how good has the media been about covering this?
They've certainly told us that they're having steam tube failures. It's on the front page of the news every day. The details of what's going on, that they're failing at such low pressures. They're supposed to, the tests go up to three times the normal pressure, which is 6,600 PSI, because normal pressure is 2,200. But they're failing at 4,700, 4,800, and even as low as 20-something hundred PSI, 2,800 I think it was. Really low values.
And, of course, Mitsubishi makes steam generators that are in use elsewhere around the United States. Isn't that accurate?
Yes, that's certainly true. And around the world, they've installed more than 100 of these.
Okay, so that might be a leverage point to get other nuclear reactors tested to find out what in the world is going on with the pipes. So this is clearly an ongoing story, Ace, and I want to be able to call on you in the future and get updates on what's happening so we can understand the inside workings of this and maybe find some pressure points to use on government and officials and the power companies and just to create awareness as to what's going on.
Yeah, I did some research before I came on the air here, and the San Onofre, I think, is going to be shut down for a long time. They might just have to go ahead and order new steam generators, but they won't be able to fix these enough to make them run. And if they do have to fix them, boy, they're going to have to do a lot of testing. So it's possible it'll be down for a long time. And you know what? It joins a list of some other reactors that are down for a long time, such as Fort Calhoun up in Nebraska, which had a flood last year.
Mm-hmm. Flood and fire.
Yeah, a fire before that and then a flood. And Crystal River in Florida, they did the same thing that we did, which was we had to cut into the dome to get these steam generators into the reactor in the first place because they were never supposed to wear the old ones, the ones that took a little while to wear out, you know, 25 years or whatever. They were never supposed to wear out. They were supposed to last the whole life of the reactor, 40 years, 60 years, whatever, but they didn't, and so they had to cut a hole in the dome to put the new ones in. Well, they cut the hole in the dome in Crystal River, and they can't get the dome to work right anymore. It keeps breaking.
You know, we need to move on right now, but I want to thank you, Ace, for this information because you're up on it and you understand it and can explain it very well. And I want to be able to come back to you as an ongoing source for this as we watch the dangerous, life-threatening three-ring circus that is San Onofre and through that the other power plants that might have these kind of steam generators in them. But we do have an opportunity still here in California to put an initiative on the ballot that will effectively shut down both San Onofre and Diablo Canyon, completely separate from the issues that are going on in San Onofre. And I know, Donna, that you're very involved in this. So can you bring us up to date on what's been happening with the initiative process and what we can do to support you in getting the signatures you need?
Well, number one, I want to comment on your Ace said they've got some media, front page media attention. Maybe that's in San Diego County, but in Orange County, we do not get press. The only press we get is in the local section that only goes to San Clemente citizens. So the rest of Orange County is literally in the dark when it comes to media on this. I wanted to make that clear. And regarding the having hope that this thing's going to get shut down, the NRC always sides with the utility company, so I am not optimistic there's anything we can do short of this initiative to keep this plant shut down. That's why I'm working so hard on it. The initiative got a big boost from all the Fukushima events that happened at the anniversary of the one-year anniversary of Fukushima on March 11th. That generated finally some media coverage, and we actually had people looking for us wanting to know where they can sign the petition at that point. But we still need to get the word out to the public about this petition. People are really supportive when they become aware of the facts. So anything people out there can do to help increase awareness of the petition is kind of a self-serve. You can download the petition.
Where can they download the petition from? Give us that information right now.
They can download it either from the San Onofre safety.com website or the California Nuclear Initiative.com website. But you need to act by April 7th. April 7th is the date that you have to mail the petitions in so we can get them in time, so we can get this on the November ballot. So finally the people, for the first time, can have some say in whether they want those two unnecessary nuclear plants.
So this is something that anyone here in the state of California can do to collect signatures on the ballot initiative and get them sent in. And the address and all the information is on the ballot. It's the ballot initiative itself.
Yes, all the tools you need, all the information you need to download the petitions and some tools for helping gather signatures. Even if you just want to download it for yourself and your family and send it in, you can do that. So
right, and they don't have to be. It doesn't have to be filled in. All the slots don't have to be filled in with signatures.
If you only
have one or two on it, that's fine too. Just send it in; they will be counted.
Exactly, and this is a grassroots effort. So this is one time where people can't sit back and wait for somebody else to do it. This is the time that people have to take action, because nobody else is going to do this one for you. And we have a window of opportunity here, and I hope people take the time to do this, because you could literally change your life.
And can certainly change the life for the future and really all forms of life.
Yes. Unfortunately, the history of Edison and the NRC is to continue to put us in danger while they make the profits. I don't know if you wanted to talk about this earthquake studies that we're now on the hook for, or if we're out of time.
Right. Well, let's talk about that at another time to let people know, because it's always good to know when our tax money is being diverted into supporting an industry that so many of us do not want. But for now, I invite you to stay on the podcast till the end, but I want to thank both of you, Donna Gilmore and Ace Hoffman, for being my guests today and filling us in on the picture here in Southern California. Because as we figure out tactics and strategies and find things that work here, they can be spread to other places as well. And we are all part of an international movement against these things. So thank you very much for all of your efforts, and thanks for being on the podcast today.
Thanks for having us, Libby.
My pleasure. Moving on to the news, just a quick look at some radiation news here in the United States. For the first time, the United States, after decades of denial, has conceded that since the dawn of the atomic age, workers making nuclear weapons have been exposed to radiation and chemicals that have produced cancer and early death. The new finding that the exposure led to higher than normal rates of a wide range of cancers among workers at 14 nuclear weapons plants raises the prospect of compensation to them. The government's most comprehensive review of studies of worker health and related raw health data accepts the conclusion of many of those studies, some done under contract for the government, that the workers were made sick by their exposure. Of the new conclusion, Energy Secretary Bill Richardson said in an interview, "This is the first time that the government is acknowledging that people got cancer from radiation exposure in the plants." So the government is now officially acknowledging that radiation causes cancer. Someone on my nuclear hot seat site pointed out a report. Now, this is going back to 2008, but it's relevant, especially in the wake of Fukushima, that a study on childhood cancer near nuclear power plants in Florida have shown that, this is according to a study by the Radiation and Public Health Project, it shows that level of fission product, strontium-90, in the teeth of children living in southeast Florida had increased 37% between the late 80s and the mid-90s. The highest levels were found near the Turkey Point and St. Lucie reactors. The amount of radioactive strontium-90 appeared to be 85% higher in the teeth of children with cancer than those without. These results might suggest a link between cancer and exposures to radioactivity from the reactors. By the way, this the Radiation and Public Health Project is an independent nonprofit research organization established by scientists and physicians to investigate the links between environmental radiation, cancer, and the public health. One more bit of radiation news here in the United States. That there was the discovery of radioactive tissue boxes at Bed Bath & Beyond stores. This was in January, and it has raised alarms among nuclear security officials and company executives over the growing global threat of contaminated scrap metal. This according to Reuters. Radioactive items used to power medical, military, and industrial hardware are regularly melted down and reused in goods, driving up company costs as they withdraw tainted products and threaten the public health. Chronic exposure to low levels of radiation can lead to cataracts, cancer, and birth defects, according to the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. These are government figures. A 2005 study of more than 6,000 Taiwanese who lived in apartments built with radioactive reinforcing steel, they lived there between 1983 and 2005, showed a statistically significant increase in leukemia and breast cancer. And be aware that India and China are the top sources of radioactive goods shipped to the United States, according to the Department of Homeland Security. So, lots of radiation out there. This stuff just keeps spreading. There's no way to contain it, and it's showing up all over the place. We've got to cut it out. Speaking of India, there are 10 people who have now been arrested in connection with the protests of the Kudankulam nuclear reactor in India. The local government is increasing police strength in front of the nuclear power plant and is being reinforced with various forms of police and military around there. The people who were arrested are part of the People's Movement Against Nuclear Energy. And one point they wanted to make clear to us, meaning the protesters wanted us to know about, is that the government of India, the Department of Atomic Energy, the Nuclear Power Corporation of India, and the Kudankulam Nuclear Power Plant have not conducted any emergency preparation drills or evacuation exercises to prepare the people within 30-kilometer radius for any nuclear disasters. If these authorities try to load nuclear fuel rods without doing these mandatory exercises, it would be deemed illegal by India's Atomic Energy Regulatory Board rules, the International Atomic Energy Agency, and other international stipulations. It's interesting that it would be illegal there, but here in the United States, there is no such plan in place for any of the nuclear power plants here in California or elsewhere around the country. Moving on to Canada, The Unit 2 nuclear reactor at Canada's Bruce Power, which has been out of service since 1995, 15 to 16 years, was shut down over the weekend because of a leak as it was being restarted after a refurbishment. The unit will remain shut down while the leak is investigated and steps are taken to prevent a recurrence. Though, you know, if I had an old car that had been up on the blocks for 15 years or more, I would expect the oil leaks to be pretty consistent. This isn't oil. We're talking about another substance that's far more dangerous. In Canada, again, authorities have said that people living there after Fukushima were safe and faced no health risks from fallout. They said most of the radiation from Fukushima would fall into the ocean, where it would be diluted and not pose any danger. But Dr. Dale Delwar, who is a family physician in Wynard, Saskatchewan, did not believe them. Dr. Dewar is the executive director of Physicians for Global Survival, a Canadian anti-nuclear group, and says the Canadian government has downplayed radiation risks from Fukushima and is doing little to monitor them. According to this doctor, radioactive cesium has consistently been found in Japanese fishing catches each month, tested by Japan's fishery agency. Specifically back in November, which is the most recent information available, 16 of 22 species tested contained radioactive cesium. In 73% of the mackerel tested, 91% of the halibut, pay attention to these fish, 92% of sardines, 93% of tuna and eel, 94% of cod and anchovies, and 100%, meaning all samples of carp, seaweed, shark, and monkfish. Some of the fish were caught in Japanese coastal waters, and others were made hundreds of kilometers away in open ocean. They were caught by fishers from dozens of nations, yet Japan is the only country that appears to be systematically testing fish for radiation and publicly reporting the results. So any of those fish species that I mentioned, you might want to avoid. For the holistic tip today, for protecting oneself from the effects of radiation, keeping our health high and keeping our sanitation high around radiation, comes information about the herb rosemary. In two separate studies, scientists in Spain found that nothing fights radiation damage to micronuclei like the simple garden herb rosemary. They noted that ionizing radiation causes massive generation of free radicals that induce cellular DNA damage, and found that various substances in the rosemary, carnosic acid and carnosol and other substances as well. Let's put it this way. Rosemary is good for you, so use it on your fish, use it in a tea, put it in your stuffing, use it in salad dressings, anywhere you can. It's one of those good things for your body. In closing today, this has been Nuclear Hot Seat for Tuesday, March 20th, 2012. We have now made it easy for you to find us and hook up with us. You can go to nuclearhotseat.com, and on any of the pages there in the upper right-hand corner, you will find little buttons that will link you to us on Twitter, Facebook, and the little orange button allows you to subscribe to the RSS feeds of our podcast. No need to hassle with iTunes. Just click on the RSS feed, follow the prompts, and you will get the information for Nuclear Hot Seat and the link to each week's podcast in your inbox. And it's all free, free, free. In closing, this is Libby Halevi of Heartistry Communications, the heart of the art of communicating, reminding you that we've all had our nuclear wake-up call. Now, do not go back to sleep. Be safe, be well, and I'll speak with you next week.